I'm super happy. Are you happy? Welcome to the Be You, Find Happy podcast. Here you'll find tips and tricks to inspire you on your way to happiness, to live a courageous life of authenticity, and learn how to speak your truth with grace. I'm Michaela Johnson, and welcome to our podcast. It's the news I have been promising, and I can finally share it with you. And it almost feels so odd to be sharing this news during this time of the world, but it's like such an incredible time to be the you that you want to be. And so I am stoked to finally tell you guys that I have empowered a motivational journal for women coming out June. And guys, let me tell you, it is full of thought-provoking prompts that encourage and empower you to dig deep and cultivate positive change. It's motivational. It's got tons of inspirational quotes and plenty of pages to write and a gorgeous design with illustrations. And I am so proud of it. It totally puts into practice everything that I did to see the dream of being traditionally published with an international book to fruition. And I know that so many of these prompts have had wild success with my clients, and I'm so excited to finally share this with you. And you can pre-order it today. Ah, I can't believe it's like really happening. And I put the link in the show notes. Check it out. John, so happy to have you on the Be You, Find Happy podcast today.
Many thanks, Michaela.
Now, are you in Italy? Is that what I'm
currently in the Netherlands, in Europe.
In the Netherlands. Okay. Yeah. I noticed from your profile that you do quite a bit of travel and you've lived quite a bit of places. So it didn't surprise me when I saw Monaco, but it sounds like it's the Netherlands.
Today I'm in the Netherlands. Yeah.
Wow. Could you just give the listeners a little bit of your backstory? Because there's so much you've done. I think you've written, 10 books now?
Yeah, 10 books. Number 11 is coming out in, I think, in 1 month.
Wow.
Just to summarize very quickly, I write books about personal development based on history. It's a particular approach that combines a lot of historical research, going through hundreds of biographies of people in different centuries, different professions, different countries, trying to find patterns of behavior that have proven very successful in history, and to try to draw lessons that we can use today in the 21st century. The books are very factual, very practical. And what I try to do is to extract lessons that anybody can put into practice. I'm very skeptical about, we can discuss this later, I'm very skeptical about positive thinking and the law of attraction and these ideas that today are so prevalent, dominant in Western culture. I think for most people, they are not going to work. They work for some people. If you have this personality that is very open, very enthusiastic by nature, it's very easy to be enthusiastic, to be positive. For most people, it's very difficult to sustain a positive attitude in the long term. It consumes a lot of energy. And what I try to do in my books is to present a rational approach, a very much factual, practical approach for things you can do that do not require a lot of psychological investments. Because if you consume your energies, the little energies that when people are going through a crisis and they are in panic and they are worried, they are sick, they don't have a lot of energy. And I think that they should not spend their energy trying to be artificially cheerful. It is much better to try to find practical solutions.
I like that. You know, we've had people on the podcast that are all about synchronicity and the law of attraction. We've had people on the podcast that say that's not going to get you know, farther than a stone's throw. So I love that we're going to chat today a little bit about these different concepts. And one of the things that you say is that you're skeptical about going back to nature as a recipe for happiness.
Can you share a little bit about what you mean by that and what that's about?
Yeah, today is one of the stories and the patterns you listen to in the media almost constantly. And they tell you, oh, you have to go to become more close to nature. You have to simplify your life. You have to go and live in a village and to grow your own vegetables and this kind of stuff. And maybe, I don't know, even you produce your own shoes and your own clothes. And this idea of becoming more natural in the sense of getting back to very basic technology and giving up urban life, industry, high productivity technology, you hear it very, very often. And today we have this hysteria about the weather, the climate change. People are terrified that the world is going to end in, I don't know, in 10 years, whatever. I mean, this is massively exaggerated. And I'm very skeptical about this idea of going back to nature, because you have to realize that if you apply these ideas, most people are going to starve. I mean, they don't realize that going back to nature and giving up technology, it means working 14 hours a day, having no electricity, having to deal with mosquitoes, spiders, snakes, this kind of stuff. And this is what nature means for most people. So you have to be realistic enough to separate the idea of having a nice holiday. If you take a holiday for a couple of weeks in the countryside, it's very good, and you go to the mountains, it's very healthy. But one should not confuse a holiday with a lifestyle. And for most people, it's absolutely impractical to take this approach, especially if you have high qualifications and you are a good marketer or a good engineer or a good whatever. It's very unlikely you can make a living by living in an isolated village somewhere. And the lifestyle you will encounter there will be so boring and so monotone that for most people it's not a solution. And this is why in this book, especially it's a book about disruptions, I think that people should try to improve their resistance to stress, their resilience, by improving their lives where they live, not by going to an ideal Middle Ages existence in a countryside in some village, because this is not going to work. It's a pure fantasy.
Yeah, you know, I live in the Middle Ages. I live in a rural community in the nature and all of this and that. But even I can't get away from modern technology. I mean, this is how the world is now. And I do agree with you to a certain extent that incorporate it as much as you can. But recognize that we're not going to devolve. That's not going to happen. Humans are going to continue to evolve. And so how do you cope? And I love your term, and I use it often myself, have some resiliency with how life is now. I like that. And that's very true. Why do you think that people learn more from success than they do from failure? This is a big thing that you talk about. I'm really curious about that.
Well, because we tend to remember positive stories forever, and we like to tell our friends when we get even a minimum success. I mean, imagine that someone invests, $10,000 in the stock market, and then he makes 10%. I'm sure he's going to tell his friends for the next 20 years. But people tend to hide their mistakes. They tend to forget even themselves, because it's unpleasant when you make a mistake, when you screw up, when you just don't make enough research, and then you just fail. We try to hide this kind of stuff. And my books, I cover hundreds of biographies of different people, different centuries. I devote as much attention to success as to failure, because it's important to understand the beneficial patterns of behavior. And it's also to understand, it's very important to understand that other patterns deal with human nature, with panic, with pride, And you have to try to avoid those. It's not so pleasant sometimes to talk about failure. And in this latest book, I deal with a lot of stories of very intelligent people and very sophisticated people who destroy their lives because they get into patterns of behavior that are very dangerous.
So people fail because they're stuck in patterns that are dangerous?
Yeah, I can give you an example. The idea for the book, I got the idea about 3 years ago. I was reading the biography of a Russian industrialist. His name is Savin Montov. He was a great entrepreneur. He built railroads in the 19th century before the Russian Revolution, before the communists. He was very successful. He could speak several languages. He studied in France. He was extremely bright. He made a fortune when he was in his 40s. He was a celebrity. He had a huge art collection. I mean, really a very sophisticated person. He was a celebrity in Russia. And this person I find very intriguing because within a few years, he destroyed his life completely. He started a steel manufacturing company because he wanted to expand his railroad empire. He wanted to make steel. He started to lose a lot of money because he assumed that the fact that he could run a railroad, which is basically a service business, he was qualified to do anything. And he started to do this steel manufacturing. It was a disaster. He started to lose money. And instead of giving up and saying, okay, I really made a mistake. I should not have started this business I know nothing about. He used money from the railroad to pay for the losses in the steel manufacturing. His shareholders became very angry when they found out. And they sued him. He was prosecuted for embezzlement. And eventually he didn't go to jail. But he lost everything. He lost his businesses, he lost his houses, his art collection. And for the last 13 years of his life, he lived in total misery, he was ostracized by his friends. Nobody wanted to talk to him. It was a very sad story. And you see the pattern. This is a historical pattern. It shows the worst possible way to deal with disruptions. And this is one of the main lessons from the latest book. If you want to become very resilient and you want to be able to deal with problems, with adversity, with setbacks, you have to do exactly the opposite as Mamontov did. What Mamontov did was to improvise. He started a new business. He knew nothing about steel manufacturing. He made assumptions that were completely wrong. And he didn't have the humility to say, I made a mistake. I should go back to what I know. And this is the key to being very effective in times of disruption. You just realize that there are things you don't know, there are things you know, and you go back to the basics, to the area you know, to the profession you know, to the skills you have, to the friends you have for 20 years, to the territory you know, and then you get back on your feet very quickly. And within a few years, you will be doing very well. If you start to improvise, as many people do, and you see the stories constantly in the newspapers, a basketball player who loses all his savings in some stupid restaurant investment, or some Hollywood movie star who invests in, I don't know, some gold mine, and he loses all his life's savings. You see this pattern constantly. When people improvise, when people start to do something they know nothing about, and they don't have sufficient humility to recognize that they have to go back to what they know, then they become very vulnerable. And one of the main lessons from this book is that if you avoid improvisation and you go back to areas and skills you know very well, you will be very strong in times of crisis.
So you talk a little bit about factors that are making people particularly vulnerable today. Would this be one of them, like a fear of going back to, like of their pride getting in the way of making amends or you know, giving up, quote unquote, something like that?
This is one of the patterns. There are different patterns. I go through them in different chapters of the book. Another pattern that today is very prevalent is the idea of continuity. And this is something that is very typical of the 21st century. We get through education and through the media and through our environment, we get this false idea that history and time is a continuum, and every day and every year is going to be a little better, and the company you work for is going to grow next year by 6%, and you get a better position, you get a better salary, your business is going to grow, your health is going to continue in a very good shape, and then you're going to become, and everything's going to be okay. And we get this delusion of continuity, which is very dangerous. And this is why you see people that cannot fulfill their expectations, because they have this fantasy of continuity. They immediately become very angry. And this is why you see so many people, you see so much violence today in society. People become extremely angry when they don't fulfill their expectations, their delusions most of the time, or they go the other way and they become very depressed, very anxious. And this is why you have, only in the U.S., you have 50 million people taking medication against stress and anxiety. So these reactions are very, very much irrational. What I try to do in the book is to try to show the underlying philosophy. And this is one of the factors that makes people very vulnerable in the 21st century. We have this fantasy of continuity. History shows exactly the opposite. If you want to be very strong and very resilient, you have to have sufficient margins, not only financial margins, but sufficient margins in your life, in your health, in your relationships, sufficient margins built in your system so that when you hit the next bump on the road, and this will happen inevitably, you will have sufficient margins in your life to be able to keep your act together. If you don't have that, you will become extremely vulnerable. This is why you see so many people are depressed, they are anxious, they're angry, and this is not the solution. I think it's very important to build in your life, in your areas of activity, to build sufficient margins so that you will continue to do very well, even if the your life will not be always getting better, because for a while, you might hit a crisis, a professional crisis, health problems. You might go bankrupt. You might lose your business. It's very important that you have these margins built in your life to go through difficult periods.
So what steps can people take to protect themselves from unforeseen events and threats and things like that?
Yeah, there are different strategies I present in the book. We can go through a few of them. One of the most important factors that you see in history repeatedly, people who are doing very well. For example, in the book, I analyze the life of Robert Stephenson, who was an investor in the 19th century. He invested in different companies, mainly on railroads, but he invested in different areas. And he developed systems for dealing with risk because what he was doing was actually quite risky. He was starting, he was raising money for different companies. He had to get concessions to build in different areas. So it was very risky. And he went bankrupt when he was in his 30s, very close to bankrupt. He was at the almost losing everything a couple of times. And he almost got a fatal nervous breakdown. And he learned the lesson. And what he did systematically for the next 40 years of his life, the next 30 years of his life, he became extremely organized, and he diversified his risk to an extent that is very difficult to imagine someone like that. But even in the 19th century, he was separating all his risks systematically. He would separate his investments, he would create a different company for each enterprise. Even his life, his lifestyle through the day, he used to break it down into segments to make sure that he could manage all his different businesses at a certain time every day without getting nervous, without getting disrupted. And the strategy of breaking down risk and diversifying, you should apply to every area of your life. You should diversify your skills. You should diversify your friendships. If possible, try to learn a second language because it's a very easy way of diversification, very inexpensive. I think one of the obstacles, I think psychological obstacles, that prevents people from learning a second language because they think it's very expensive and very difficult. But it's not true. It's just a question of spending every day 10 or 15 minutes. For Americans, it's extremely easy to learn Spanish. There is just a psychological barrier. And this is one of the ways to ensure that you will have access to opportunities that for many other people will become invisible. Because if you don't speak the language and you're not able to get the information, you will lose access to many opportunities. So the message is that one of the best, very best strategies for preventing risk and staying very strong in times of danger, in times of adversity, is to diversify everything, every aspect, every area of activity in your life, because you will become extremely strong, almost undestructible.
So you talk about living rationally. Is that basically just knowing things are going to happen and prepare yourself with how to deal with it?
Well, I call the thread of ideas that go through my books, I call it rational living, because what I try to do is to extract ideas and strategies that are based on logic. They're based on reason. But the goal of learning from history and to going through the stories and try to familiarize yourself with patterns of behavior, the goal is not to become a robot and say, okay, I'm perfectly rational and I never make mistakes. This is completely unrealistic. The goal is to become maybe 1%, 2%, 3% more rational because you are aware of many stories, many patterns of behavior, many risks that for most people remain invisible. But if you are familiar with all these stories and all these principles, the next time you have to make a decision, especially if you are under pressure because you are in a crisis and you have to make a quick decision, if you have this background of knowledge and you are familiar with these stories, you will make better decisions. And this is why I say that you just want to become a little bit more rational, 1%, 2%, 3%. It will make a huge difference in the long term, but the best teacher is history. I don't think that you can learn all these ideas and all these patterns just by speculating or by reading abstractions. You have to see the story. You have to see why people make these kind of mistakes. Because then you internalize the idea and you will never forget the principle because you know the story.
That makes sense. That makes sense. So one of the things you talk about in your book is you warn against the prophets of doom. But, you know, pessimism just seems to be kind of rampant and justified. Can you explain what you mean by that?
Yeah, the problem is that we should not go in a direction that you lose perspective and you lose touch with reality. And it's very easy to do that because when we're watching TV or we're listening to the media, it is so compelling to listen to exaggerated stories. Now, today, as we are talking, we have this story of the virus, this coronavirus, that is complete hysteria. And then people are saying, oh, my God, we're going to die and this kind of stuff. I mean, this story, I think, will disappear in a few weeks and it will be forgotten, like all the previous viruses we had in the previous years. It's just exaggeration. And the only way to keep a balanced head and to keep cool when you are going through this crisis and these threats is to look into history to see what has happened before and to try to become a bit more rational. because there is no way that you can stay away easily from the information because it's everywhere. You turn on the radio, you watch TV, you get the newspaper, it's everywhere. It's the sky is falling, the sky is falling, we're going to die. And if it's not the virus, it's the environment, it's the global warming. If it's not the global warming, something else. There is always something. And then people become completely terrified. It's a Chicken Little all the time, that the sky is falling, the sky is falling. And when you look in history and you look at stories, you see that it has been falling all the time for centuries. Nothing has happened. When you have the good attitude and the good strategies, you are going to do very well despite all disruptions. So it is very important to look into history to get perspective, because otherwise we start to look at the world with a very short-term orientation, and we become afraid, we panic, we make stupid mistakes, and this is what you should avoid. And this is why it's so important to get the perspective that these things have happened before, very similar problems. People have solved these problems already. You don't need to panic. You just need to copy the same strategies that people have been using for centuries.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I do think everything kind of gets doomsday and a little intense, and you see, it seems to be, you know, very overreactive. Like you said, it's almost like we need some Chicken Little story happening all the time to feel better or something. You say knowledge is the only valid response to stress. Why is that?
Because you cannot just manipulate yourself into happiness, strength, all these virtues. Because, I mean, if it was so easy, you just read some, I don't know, one page, say, okay, you should be this and this and this, and you just do it and it's fine, and then you're done. You're just perfect. You have a perfect personality. You're extroverted. It doesn't work. I mean, it's very difficult to change human personality once people are in their 20s, early 20s. Basically, their personality is already frozen, and it's very difficult to develop new habits, to develop the new patterns of thinking. This is why I say that it's so important to look into history and to look at the Middle Ages, to look at the 19th century, to look at the 18th century, to look at different stories, and to see how people, in circumstances that were much difficult than the circumstances we have today, they have been able to improve your lives, because then you get an idea that it is possible to improve.
But what about people that were living through, like, cholera and influenza in the early 1900s, things like that?
Yeah, and you have periods in history in Europe where you have millions of people dying, and then now today we know why. We know about the poor hygiene. We know about all the stupid therapies they had that were completely useless. But still, even in the worst possible times in history, you have people who did very well, who realized that there was a focus on infection, so they moved to another city. And they did very well, and they discovered new therapies. And for instance, during these periods of pestilence in Europe, there were people who were using garlic for disinfection, and they survived and they did very well. So you can always learn from these stories, and you can learn new therapies, new strategies, but you have to look into history, because otherwise you will be constantly terrified by the latest events in your career, in your health, in your environment, and you will not be able to really move forward.
So you talk a little bit about in the book the cathedral builders in the Middle Ages. What can we learn from them? Obviously, those were some impressive feats.
Yeah, the story is fascinating because nowadays, I mean, when you look at the building, okay, you know how they put them together, and you know the structure, the foundations, and it's very much under control. But when you want to learn to deal with chaos, with disruptions, with difficult situations, you have to look at people doing something impossible. And this is the case of cathedrals in the Middle Ages. I mean, you have to, if you go to Europe, And you look at these very high buildings, they were from the 12th or 13th centuries, and they're still standing, and they're beautiful, and they are very solid, and they are fantastic. You have to realize that they were built with very, very low technology, with a very tight budget. They were built by people who could barely read. Most of them could not read. A few could, but most of them could not read. They spoke different languages, so they could not communicate easily. They could not work during the winter because it was extremely cold in Europe in the Middle Ages, so they could only work outside, outdoors. They could only work from May until September. I mean, I can go on and on. I mean, the level of difficulties was huge. There were no roads. It was extremely difficult to transport anything. I mean, it was very, very difficult. And still, they built the cathedrals within a very short period of time. I mean, some cathedrals were built in 50 years with only 200 people. I mean, with a very, very limited manpower. And I found the story very interesting to see how they did it, because the strategies are something you can use today. You have a company, you have a business. It's exactly the same strategies, because these people in the Middle Ages, they were dealing with uncertainty. They were dealing with risk. They were dealing with all kind of disruptions, with sickness, extreme temperatures, and still they did it. And what I've done in this chapter of the book is to go through the strategies they use. Actually, they were all developed by one person, and his name was Suger. He was a monk living at the beginning of the 12th century. And basically, what Suger did is to make a list of all the problems that he was going to face when he was going to restore a church in Saint-Denis, close to Paris, to find solutions, to try to find a way to solve all the problems, because the technology that he was using and the resources, they were known. But nobody had taken the trouble to try to develop defensive strategies to make the whole thing work together. And after Suger found the solution, how to deal with all these problems very easily, the rest of Europe basically copy-pasted, and they imitated the first cathedral that was built in Saint-Denis, and basically they're all the same. They copy the patterns, they copy the design, the building technology, they copied everything. But Suger actually found a way how to do it. Let me just give you an example. For instance, one of the problems when you're running a business and when you're doing something complex, or for instance, when you're changing careers and you say, I don't want to be a nurse anymore. I want to be, a lawyer. And then you want to change. And it's very difficult to do. When you're doing these things that have immense complexity, because they involve uncertainty, they involve risk, they involve resources, Suger realized that it is impossible to have perfect planning. Because you cannot really find a straight line because there are so many obstacles. When he started to build the cathedral, he didn't have all the answers. But what is important is that he developed a system that was very resilient to allow him to make progress every day. For instance, one of the problems he was facing from the very beginning is that he could not work through the year. During the winter, it's so cold that people couldn't wake outdoors. And what they did in the Middle Ages, and this is something that today seems completely stupid, but they were doing this for centuries, they hire people in May, April, May, to work until September, and then they fired everybody during the winter, and then the people were hired again in the spring. And this was completely stupid, of course, because you lose all the expertise. Suger, what he did, the first thing he did to build the cathedral is not to build the cathedral. He built houses for the workers so that they could work through the year, and they could work in the winter indoors, cutting stones, and then they could work in the spring and summer outdoors, putting the stones on the wall. And there is a very important lesson for that, because if you are trying, for instance, to change your careers, to improve your health, to do something that is very challenging because you have a lot of obstacles, you should use the same strategy. You should try to develop a system of work like Suger did in the 12th century by building cathedrals, where you can make some progress every day. Even if it's not a huge progress, you can still work on something. When you're running a business, For instance, some days you have a meeting with a potential customer and then the meeting is canceled. You should immediately go and do something else. Like Sujet, people were doing the meeting in Middle Ages, if they could not work outdoors, they work indoors. But every minute was used productively. And this is something that is super important. If you're trying to improve your health, don't focus everything on eating some particular diet. You should have a good diet. You should do exercise. You should sleep well. You have to try everything so that every day you can make some progress. And eventually, after a few months, you will recover. And this is why it's so important to have this kind of a smooth strategy. I go into great detail of the strategies of Sujet in this chapter of the book, but the lessons are universal because you can apply them to running a business, to recovering your health, to making additional friends. These kind of strategies are very powerful because once they were discovered now 1,000 years ago, they are still being used and they're very, very effective.
So one last question before we have to go. Do you think that positive thinking can help us deal with all of these different things that humans are going to overcome and all of the great advancements that we're going to make?
It can help you if you use it correctly. The way that today is presented, which is basically people using mantras and say, oh, I'm going to make it, and you see it constantly on the media, is very, very detrimental because people become very, very unrealistic. They become very much delusional. This is not the way it works. If you look at the history of positive thinking, how it was invented actually in the 19th century in Europe. It was invented in France by a pharmacist whose name was Émile Coué. And Coué was a scientist. He tried to invent, to create a new marketing technique because he had a pharmacy in the north of France. He took a course on hypnotism and suggestion, and he started to use his techniques in the pharmacy to try to make his patients, his customers, recover quickly. So he told them stories about recovery, about recovering their health, getting better. And he made the statistics, very detailed statistics about the results. And he proved that positive thinking works very well. And he wrote several books about it. He made very detailed statistics for years. And he became a very successful in his business. People went to this pharmacy from kilometers around because they heard about Coué. Because his therapies were so successful. And the reason why it worked, and this is why positive thinking sometimes works, is that when you apply suggestion and you apply positivity together with the rational behavior, in the case of Coué, he was actually motivating people to take their medications. He would prescribe to them, for instance, a sage infusion or chamomile, whatever, and he motivated people to take the medication to change the lifestyle, to become healthier, and then it works. And then positive thinking can be very helpful because it helps you do something positive. But if you take positive thinking in isolation, devoted of any connection to a strategy, is very detrimental because it creates false expectations and the only result will be depression.
Wow. That's some interesting food for thought, and I appreciate your perspective on it, and I like that you've got the historical component. Where can people get in touch with you to find out more about your books?
It's very, very easy to find. If you just type my name, Jean Vespasian, on Google, you will find everything in a second. There are books. There is a free newsletter. There is a blog with thousands of free articles. Very, very easy to find. Just type Jean Vespasian on Google and you will find all the books in 1 second.
Fantastic. Thank you so much. I can tell you've just got so much research and knowledge on this. And of course, we'll include all of the show notes as well. And people can look for your book coming out next month. Thank you so much for being on the podcast today.
Okay. Many thanks, Amicala.
This has been a BU Find Happy podcast. For more inspiration, check out the links.